Hey, folks, what a show we have for you today. Very excited about it, but I'm also very excited to tell you about the sponsor we're working with here over at Verbal Shenanigans. As we turn the corner from the cold, dreary winter into the warmer days of spring, a new season of fantasy baseball begins at DynastySportsEmpire.com. DynastySportsEmpire.com offers you a unique fantasy baseball experience for owners young and old and abilities of all levels. So what makes DSE unique? For starters, you can draft high school and international baseball phenoms as young as 16. You can retain ownership of your favorite players for their entire career and build a cash cow contender that would make any front office envious for years to come. Check out all the fantasy baseball formats over at DynastySportsEmpire.com today or tweet them at DSC Fantasy. That's at DSC Fantasy on Twitter or online at DynastySportsEmpire.com. All right, guys, let's get to today's episode.
Hey, this is Butch Patrick, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, Eric. Mike, you're dancing. You're dancing down
the
intro.
I was dancing to you. You did a little, like, duck motion there. So
me shaking off the tiredness before I
we started. Yeah, not a good beat.
Got you dancing. I didn't know if you were dancing to the Verbal Shenanigans theme song that we don't really play live when we're recording, but I was just assuming it was, like, in your head getting you moving
a little bit. It's always going in my head. I can't get it to stop. I've been calling doctors. There's nothing really they can do. This will be the death of me, but at least I go out.
What else goes on in your head that won't stop?
I mean, pretty much whatever, you know, recipes for butter. Do I know enough Dukes of Hazzard trivia to be worthy of being a grandmaster?
Listen, you might not want to throw the terms Grandmaster and Dukes of Hazzard together anymore. You know, like
Grandmaster of knowledge,
right? There's, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Not that other Grandmaster thing that people want to try to associate with them. They were good people, different times. We can agree to disagree.
Now, with your Dukes of Hazzard knowledge, you find that since it's not really on anymore too frequently, and I don't know if you have like the DVD set that you flip on every once, do you find that your knowledge is dwindling as the days go on, as you get older and closer to death?
I mean, I had the DVD set, but I can't remember the last time I had a working DVD player to even use it, so that doesn't really help. I gotta see it. I would assume they're on a streaming service. I would assume they would go to that new Paramount one, which I'm sure will be blockbusters because everybody had their CBS All Access account. So naturally, the Paramount Plus is going to be extraordinary.
Right. All right. Well, I didn't know. Like, you know, now that you don't get to partake in it, just like a little refresher, like. Like, I would probably say I've seen every episode of Seinfeld at least 5 times each over the years. Especially, like, that was like my go-to-bed show back in the day. Like, okay, going to bed for school. Seinfeld was always on at 11 o'clock. And then for some reason, Fox always, it would be like The Simpsons, then Seinfeld, then Seinfeld, then The Simpsons. Mm. They would always, like, flop them back and forth. So those two shows growing up, I probably saw all those like 5 times each, and then forget about The Simpsons. That's long gone. But but Seinfeld, like, I don't really watch it too much anymore, so I would think some of my knowledge might be slipping.
I mean, I'm sure I'm not as good as I was back in the day, but I mean, it's I mean, I got to be frank. The show started in 79. There's not going to be many opportunities to start a conversation where I'm like, man, I got schooled because I forgot that episode.
Yeah, plus maybe a lot of the audience is dying off at this point. You might still be the grandmaster, as you say. Well, I mean,
every day I get an email from Catherine Box. Stop contacting me. Yes, you're the only one. Leave me alone.
Well, the Dukes. No,
you can't call me Daisy.
The Dukes were forbidden from using guns. So, what weapon did they use instead?
Bow and arrow, sometimes with the dynamite attached to it.
That's what they did. You think that's a feasible weapon? A dynamite, bow and arrow? Like I can't. I think that you should do that for some content for us. Go outside, pick up a bow and arrow and a stick of dynamite, and shoot it and see what happens.
I mean, how much time do you have with a stick of dynamite, out of curiosity? Like how long is the usual wick size?
Well, this
compensate it?
This is what you're going to find out for us shortly.
I mean, this is like a Mythbusters thing. Like, I can't just like grab any stick of dynamite. I got to know what the average length of the wick, average weight of a dynamite stick. and you know, attributed to like a 1979 bow and arrow set. Like, we're not talking pristine, like metal kind of bow and arrows nowadays or crossbows.
I can't imagine the dynamite stick would help the arrow too much. Like, I feel like it would add a lot of weight to the arrows.
I feel like you would have to like arc it and then be like super lucky. Like, the person who's running away would have to be fairly stupid to not realize, okay, at this angle, if I keep on running, it's going to hit me straight in the back, and then I'm going to explode because of dynamite.
Well, guys, tune into our Instagram page over the next 2 weeks, and Mike will be like a myth buster for rednecks. All right, well.
The neck busters.
What did Cooter do for a living?
He owned a garage.
Okay.
He was a mechanic.
All right. What line is Roscoe P. Coltrane say repeatedly?
Okay, let's see. It's Roscoe P. Coltrane here.
Would you like four options? Then you'll probably get it.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think a line. Well, Go ahead. Give me options.
The Grandmaster would have known that. I'm in Hot Pursuit. I love it. I love it. Buzzard on a buzzsaw, possum on a gum bush, or I might be crazy, but I ain't dumb.
That's the first one.
I'm in Hot Pursuit.
Hot Pursuit.
Why were Bo and Luke on probation?
The Grandmaster's
struggling. He needs to blow off that DVD player.
I want
to
say moonshining.
They're running moon. Correct. Yeah, nice. Grandmaster.
That makes sense with the NASCAR affiliation and so forth. That's why they went away and Coy and Vance showed up, because they are on the NASCAR circuit. But magically, then Coy and Vance's mother got sick. So then it's like, well, we got to give up NASCAR because, you know, Daisy and Uncle Jesse can't run a farm by themselves.
Well, I think I'm just going to hit you with a Dukes of Hazzard question randomly throughout the podcast. So we're going to be mid-conversation, and I'm just going to blast you with one and give you like a time limit to answer. But you're on track so far. You answered, what, 3 out of 3, whatever the hell we did?
Yeah, so, yeah, pretty much.
So, all right. Although you needed options for Roscoe P., so I don't know if that's
great. I mean, that's not really like a famous line. Like, he says it, but like, there's no T-shirts that say Hot Pursuit, Hot Pursuit.
There could be if you get on it.
Now I gotta Google this. Hold on. Well, go on, entertain our audience while I Google.
Anyway, guys, as we're losing listeners by the second here, as we do trivia from the 1970s, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. Glad to be back. Coming off arguably one of my favorite episodes that we ever done with Sam Caligioni from Dogfish Head Brewery. Got some cool responses from some of my craft beer friends on the episode and whatnot. But so go check that out. If you're just tuning in, that is Mike. I am Scott. Mike is you know, he's constantly battling with the voices in his head, and he's a box of knowledge when it comes to, I guess his wheelhouse is the Dukes of Hazzard era TV. And we like to talk about life and banter a little bit, and we always bring on a good guest. And I guess old television is an appropriate topic for this episode. But
yes, and no, there are no T-shirts that say that.
Well, there you go, Mike. If you check our Instagram, guys, in a week there will be the Verbal Shenanigans. What does he say again? Roscoe P. shirts.
Hot Pursuit.
Yeah.
Hot Pursuit.
Exactly. So there'll be a Hot Pursuit shirts that Mike is going to fund and sell on his own. And I imagine they will sell as much as our Verbal Shenanigans shirts did. So,
yep. If you buy 5 T-shirts, I'll send you a free arrow with dynamite attached to it. That's a Verbal Shenanigans promise.
Yeah. I like all the things that are going to lead to either you being canceled or arrested. You know, you're the Grand Master. You're the you got dynamite. You're sending dynamite to our listeners' accounts. Yeah, this isn't a good one for you, Mike. You're not starting off well. The voices in your head don't stop.
I mean, I'm honest with the audience. At least they can expect. It's like, all right, this is a fun show, but I'm not going to send them my address because there's nothing that's going. The second I see a box and it's got that Georgia postmark, I'll be like, call the bomb squad.
So you think when people tune in, they want your honesty. Like, that's the main thing they're coming here for. They appreciate that fact. It's not like our guests or, you know, our witty banter. They're just like, that guy, Mike, he is one honest man.
Well, I mean, I don't lie about stuff. I mean, if the numbers go down, I'll just start making stuff up as I go along.
Oh, well, but, please, I mean, please start making, please start make up anything you want. Yeah, I was, 2 nights ago, it's kind of weird. It was like, you ever, I've said on the show before, I'm not a good sleeper. Like, if I sleep, I sleep fine. But if I wake up, it takes me a while to get back to sleep. So you throw in the baby factor into, you know, having a 4-month-old into the equation. And then you have an older dog that has to go out in the middle of the night, like once, sometimes twice. It's like constant resets, you know. And even if it's like not my turn to feed the baby or whatever, I hear him wake up. And then Alex rumbles around and, you know, I wake up. But I don't know if you've ever had this before. The other night I had like a bout of like sleep paralysis, which was like frightening. Like it was weird. I was dreaming that I was laying on my chest, like on my stomach, and and that my arms were like underneath me, kind of like crossed across my body, and which is weird because I was sleeping on my back. So that's kind of a weird dream where you're dreaming you're sleeping one way, but you're actually sleeping the other. And it was like I was getting called to get up and do something, and I could not move my arms out from like under my chest. You know, like if you have like a dead arm or something like that. In my dream, okay. I just could not move my arms. And, you know, this could in real time, this could have been like a second or two. But in the dream, I swear it felt like 4 or 5 minutes. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it felt like it was like 5 minutes that I was trying to move my body and could not wake up. And I was like telling myself to wake up. And I just couldn't get out of it. And eventually I did wake up, and it definitely invoked like a panic for the rest of the night. I didn't want to go back to sleep, which was strange.
Mm. Yeah. I never had that before. I had a friend, you met her during the 40th birthday. Ashley, she used to get that, and she told me, and it's like, it's such a terrifying feeling when you know you're awake and your body refuses to acknowledge anything that's going through your head and just can't move any muscle or anything like that. And I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, I mean, thank God I haven't had it. I haven't had it since. There's been no, like, recurring of this, but what a very bizarre feeling. I'd imagine what that's like. That feeling that you have in your dream must be what it's like to be like paralyzed for real. Like, you're just telling your body to move and it just doesn't, and that's just your reality forever and ever and ever.
I mean, now that you've gone through it, do you feel that you have the cure paralysis? I mean, maybe you should, like, just sneak up to people in wheelchairs and scream, wake up, and
I do. Get up from I do. Chair. What they do for paralysis, what I hear, is you take a patient, and I actually just read a scientific work on this, so I'm pretty knowledgeable of it. They take the patient and they put them in a room with a radio that's kind of far away from them, you know, like, so they're on the opposite side of the room. What they do is they play our episodes like over and over and over again. And it's been like this breakthrough scientific technology where people who have fractured, you know, smashed their legs apart are walking within days to turn it off. People who've been paralyzed for years and were just like basically vegetables have ripped off their ventilators and gone to the radio to shut it off. It's been like, it's a really interesting documented story that I read.
I feel it's kind of like as they're in the seat, it's almost like, remember Terminator 2, like watching the T2 kind of like reform itself, like internally, like, their neck is just like, all right, just moving back into place. All right, freak this, man. I can't take this anymore. I thought Zap would have been a better guest than this.
I was just going to say they play our interview with Zap from American Gladiators, and then they followed up with Butterbean, and people are just recovering at, like, you've heard of stem cells, you've heard of massage therapy, electrotherapy, computers. Elon Musk's working on something, but apparently this therapy is well ahead of all of those.
Yes, that's why we're not allowed to play our podcast in a cemetery, because the dead will raise. And they will, I mean, they'll eat humans mainly just to punish them for waking them to this horrible nightmare known as verbal shenanigans.
Exactly. It was funny, like... I don't know. I was trying. So on Instagram, I've been trying to do. I was thinking about our guests on this show, and I was going through kind of a log of our guests. And so on Instagram, I'm going to try to do 30 musicians that we've interviewed on the show for 30. It's 31 days of March, but I didn't start it till the first. I mean the second. So you know. So 31 days of March, a musician sounds weird. So I'm doing 30 days, and I was going through some of the guests, and I was curious. We're starting to get to the point where we've had so many episodes that I don't know. Like, when I read the name, I'm not sure who these people are. So I have to, like, refresh myself and, like, read the description of the some of the episodes to realize who they were. So, Mike... I was going to put you in a little scenario here. You know, you're the grandmaster and all. So let's say you were put in a room with 12 former guests, right?
Okay.
And in a way, you kind of play God, right? But not in a fun way. Like, if you don't remember these people, they die. Okay? So, like, you have they come up to you and they say, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. And you say, oh, you're the person from blah, 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 that we interviewed, and they live. So you and whoever is left are able to escape this death room, okay? But if you forget who they are or you're unsure who they are, you end their untimely career.
All right. I just want to say before we start the game, this will pretty much be like me walking into the room with the dynamite arrow and just shooting all 12 people because my memory can get fairly atrocious after they're gone for like 5 episodes. But we'll give it a shot. We'll give it a shot.
Mike, who's Sam Calagione?
Let's see. He was on that show with that person who did a thing with the stuff.
Yep, exactly.
During the week.
Correct. All right, Mike. So you and 12 people have been locked in. It's like a new escape room, but there's dire consequences, you know? It's based on...
You know, oddly, I would love for this to be a movie. So, like, they could be, like, staring at me, like, screaming at me, like, you told me I was a great guest. You lied to me, and I'm about to die.
See,
this is like the reboot of Saw.
You don't know how many great movie ideas have come out of this show, and unfortunately, both our memories are shot. I can't even think of the one we talked about one like four episodes ago. We were talking.
I know we did Moon Jail. That one would have been.
Yeah, Moon Jail. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd have been spectacular.
All right, Mike, you've entered the room. Okay. You've entered the room. You're looking around. You're seeing some faces. Which might be kind of hard because back in the day we didn't do a lot of face to face. We did a lot of straight audio. So we'll start here, Mike. You run in, guy comes up to you. He goes, "Hey, I'm Darren Hudson. How you doing, Mike?" And you reply,
"I'm so sorry for your loss, Darren."
No idea who Darren is.
Darren Hudson.
This one's going back. I will give you some hints along the way, too, if you're told.
Go ahead. All right, I'll need them.
This one is in the early days of rounding up guests. I will tell you that. This was not a recent one. We enjoyed this interview. This was an interview that we did really like. And this was kind of like in those formative days of trying to get guests on the show. Oh, Darren.
Yeah, it's not looking good.
Would you like to take a guess, Mike, of who Darren Hudson was? It's not looking good for the other 11 people here.
It's Fratelli.
Well, Darren Hudson, Mike, was a professional lumberjack. He was a professional lumberjack.
I thought we were doing all music.
Just people.
Like, hand to God, like, I'll take that, like, in my head.
You killed Darren, Mike. You killed him.
Yeah. I'm not going to sit here and... I thought we were doing all music. That's why I was, like, sitting here, like, wait, what? Like, in my head, I thought lumberjack. But I thought we were doing all musicians. I don't know where I got the mishap from.
Well, I'm sorry, Mike. Darren has a dangerous career to begin with. Could have died of an axe accident or a log falling on him, but you just killed him from your poor memory, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I would go to his next of kin, like, listen, I needed a ruling. I thought we were doing only musicians. That's why I didn't guess.
All right. Next day, a woman comes up to you. A woman comes up to you. She goes, "Hey, Mike, how are you?" And you're like, "I'm great. Sorry what happened to Darren over there." Just ignore that incinerated mess.
Yeah, I'd be like, "Listen, now I know the rules, so we're going to be good with this one when you tell me your name."
So Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong comes up to you. She says, "Hey, Mike, how are you?" And you reply,
Keisha Armstrong, that name. Oof.
Oh no, not Jen too.
I'm gonna take a guess. Mm-hmm. Was she the fear psychologist?
Panel, was she the fear psychologist? I'm sorry, Mike. Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong was the author of a book called Seinfeldia. She was an author of a book all about the world of Seinfeld. And now she is a incinerated puddle in the death room that is Mike Berlow's memory.
I mean, some episodes were scary, so I need a ruling on that.
All right, well, you know, you have a lot of room to get this, okay?
Yeah.
Just make sure there's no Google machines around you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so then another guy comes up to you, a little quirky guy.
I don't know who Doug Max is. Just kill him.
He comes up to you, he's like, "Hey, I'm Tim Woods. How you doing?"
Ooh, I know that name. I think I know this. He was the professional Dungeons & Dragons dungeon master.
Panel? Correct, Mike. Correct. Woo! Tim Woods was a D&D enthusiast, I guess you can say, and worked as a host of Dungeons & Dragons, and he was a good guest. Very quirky, fun guy. So right now, Mike, in your room.
Yeah, and it's the perfect guy. He's all into games, and we're in an escape room, so this is perfect.
We're gonna
make out fine. The other seven remaining, I feel bad for him. I don't need them right now. I know I'm gonna win. So,
all right, Mike. You and Tim go up to another man in the room, and he's like, "Hey, man, I'm John Chatterton. How are you?"
John Chatterton. Okay. He has something to do with water, if I recall. Can I at least get the hint if I'm right on that?
I mean, we all have something to do with water, right? It's 80% of our bodies or whatever it is.
John Chatterton.
John's trembling right now. He's waiting. Yeah. He's waiting for
you. Come on, man. Help. Give me some water vibes here. Come on now.
He sees the puddle of Darren and Jennifer in the corner, and he's like, oh, God. Oh, God. Mike, who was John Chatterton?
I want to say he was the submarine guy.
I'm going to give it to you. He was the wreck diver. So he was one of the wreck divers. And it was coincidence, like in that week, like it was like a week apart or 2 weeks apart, we had like a wreck diver and then like an underwater crime guy, like within like the same month of each other.
Yeah, Mike Berry. If you ask me that, we got Mike Berry. But no, you had to see, you put that man's life on the line and we had to go to the judges to save him.
All right. So you've rebounded. You've rebounded. Yeah. You got
two people have lived.
Two
and
dead.
I still say the first one would have lived if I would have known this was not all just musicians.
I'm sorry. So you, Tim, and John now, you're all hanging out, talking about Dungeons and Dragons and underwater things. And
that's great. Like if it's something where we got to break through the floor and there's an ocean down there, we're all set. We're good. We're
so
doing
then,
fine.
Then you see this guy in the corner, another quirky fella in the room. And he's like, hey, man, I'm Harley Spiller. How you doing? I am Harley Spiller. Good to meet you.
Harley Spiller. Well, I don't like your chances right now.
Just by that sigh you did, I know this guy's dead.
Yeah, that was
That was one of those sighs where you try to answer a question you don't know, and you're like,
Harley Spiller.
Like,
if I keep
like when,
getting
your,
his
when
name,
your wife asks you, what's today? And it's some kind of like anniversary, and you're like, yeah!
Oh, it's a very special day that involves you and me. And apparently Harley Spiller. I feel bad for you, Harley. This ain't going to end good. I'm even trying to think of a remote guess on what I could.
This is also going back a number of years. As for those who are just listening, we've been 7 years in the podcast game here. Mike, Harley Spiller. All right, Harley's dead. Harley's dead.
Yeah, I'm going to guess something with marijuana. I don't know why. I was born in Barbo, but
yeah. I'm guessing. He might partake in the marijuana because he had a very interesting hobby. He was known as Inspector Collector, who had like large collections of Chinese food menus and things like that. So, I mean, Mike, you didn't kill off like a productive member of society.
Yeah. How's that going to get me out of the room? A bunch of Chinese menus, huh? It's not going to help me. I'm sorry. I got the game master. I got the water guy. We're good. We didn't need him. Probably could have used a lumberjack, but again, I wasn't told the rules. Yeah.
Lumberjack could have been like your muscle at least. Like, I feel like he'd be a good.
He's knocking down the door.
He'd be a resourceful guy to have around. Like he can carve you weapons and lift things. So,
I mean, the second girl would just tell me, did you know George Costanza went through this? I'm like, I don't care.
All right, Mike. So three dead, two alive. Next, you're approached by a kind of a cool looking gentleman. Someone, he's not as quirky. He's kind of badass looking, maybe. His name is Wills Weller. an episode we really enjoyed on the podcast. As you can see, we treasure all of our episodes like our children. Yeah. Mike is sweating right now.
If you went up to Larry King before he died and he's like, oh, you remember this guy from episode 322? He'd be like, oh, yeah.
That's why I kind of did this, because like you hear about like, you know, bands, like all these bands we interview, like they played a million shows and they don't remember like half, you know. It's getting to that point where you have so many episodes that it's kind of hard to remember.
Hmm.
Any clue on who Wills Weller is?
Tooth grinder?
Mike, that is correct. Wills Weller.
That is literally pulling it through my rear end.
Wills Weller is the very, if you remember, the very long, curly-haired drummer that we had on the podcast. Very funny guy, the band Tooth Grinder, metal band. Another episode we enjoyed a long time ago now at this point. All right, Mike. Three alive, three dead. Not bad. Hitting 500. That puts you in the Hall of Fame by far. So
Easily.
Got
some good music going on while we're trying to figure out this room.
This next one might put you out of the Hall of Fame. John Horsley comes up to you.
The name sounds familiar.
Well, that's good at least.
Yeah. Some would think I'm the one who got him on the show.
Oh, you did. You did.
John Horsley. Oh, he did the comic books. I forget the name of them, but they were like these like horror anthology kind of magazines.
I'll give it to you. You even got one of the words in there. It was the Ainz Anthology. John Horsley. Come on down. You have a very nerdy group that you're keeping close to. D&D.
The D&D guy is figuring out the room. I got some Tooth Grinder in the background. I mean, the water guy's going to be there just in case we got to escape by boat.
I bet you he's pretty resourceful, too.
And I can, at least I have some reading material to sit back and relax while we try to figure out the room.
Like, okay. I feel like John Chatterton's pretty resourceful. Like, I would want, like, Darren Hudson and John Chatterton with me. You know, like, they seem like two guys that could really get us out of a jam. But next, out of nowhere, comes a guy named Abraham. He's like, oh, I'm Abraham Joff. How you doing, Mike?
Ooh. I do hear the name.
Yep.
Abraham Joff.
I mean, the more you say it, it's not going to buy you more
time. Yeah. Yeah. It's weird how you repeat a name and it's still the brain's like, nope.
Nah.
Don't even try.
Here's why I'm enjoying this, because you have given me so many memory games over the years, and I fail at them miserably, so this is like a nice change of pace, if you will.
Yeah, it happens.
I get to see you sweat and suffer and pretend that you know what you're talking about.
Abraham Joff. With these, or is it just straight up know it or not know it?
I feel like if I gave you a clue on this guy, he might you might get him pretty quick. I will tell you two more on the list, three more on the list. I will give you hints.
Okay.
Oh, Abraham, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I'm gonna throw out a guess. Sky Falconry.
I'm sorry, panel. Panel says no. Abraham Joff was a wildlife documentary maker, photographer, who had a bunch of stuff on Nat Geo, and he's from Australia and things like that. So,
I did that interview from my car during work.
Nice. Yeah. All right, well, Mike, we're going to stop here for a second, okay? So as we approach guest time here, you got three buddies, okay? You got John Chatterton. You got four buddies.
Four.
You got John Horsley. You got Wills Weller, okay? The crew is assembling, but you've killed Abraham Joff. You've killed Mr. Spiller. You've killed Jennifer, and you killed Darren. So you're batting a perfect 500 right now. I'll have a couple names for you after we get to our guest. Now, I guess our segue here is the guy coming on the show. If you don't remember, like, this is a name that everybody knows. This is a name that kids have heard of that aren't even sure who that is, but they've heard the name because it's an iconic name in, Americana, in television culture, in classic television. So on the show, we're very excited to have the one and only Butch Patrick on the show. Now, that might not be the name you know, but you will know him as the kid who played Eddie Munster on The Munsters, one of the classic characters that I remember my dad back in the day, like, this is how far back. I remember, like, getting out of the shower and, like, you know, your parents would comb your hair or whatever, like, when you get out of the shower, and he would comb it straight back, and he'd be like, oh, he looks like Eddie Munster. You know, like, I remember that name being thrown around back then, and I remember seeing the show a little bit. So we're very excited to get Butch on. So here is our interview with Butch Patrick.
Shenanigans. Yeah, I was looking at your list of people. You've had quite a few people on here.
Yeah, we've it's been kind of a labor of love for, I would say, 7 years now, and you know, it's kind of been one of those things that, you know, you build a little resume and just be persistent and keep following up, and we've talked to more mm-hmm. people than we could ever imagine. So it's been a cool project. I guess, Butch, like, you know, like one interesting way to start is, like, we know we'll get into the Munster stuff and your career, but we during this pandemic we have talked to, like, artist after artist, musician, actor, brewers, you name it, and kind of been talking to them how they've been, like, kind of working on their craft, or have they completely shut down, or some of them have used it as a yep. great time to grow on. How about you, as, you know, someone who's involved in a lot of different things, but, like, how have you spent your time during the pandemic?
Well, my year, it's actually, perfectly honest with you, in February, my ex-wife and I parted ways, and it just so happened that I came to California March 13th to visit my sister, and on March 16th, they closed down the country. I had left my truck in Raleigh. I had left my trailer and my Munster coach in Atlanta, and everything just froze up for me until July. So that's March, April, May, June, July, about 4.5 months. And in July, I got a call to do a pilot in Cleveland and a car show in Wisconsin. So that's when I got back on the road. So I was very lucky that I literally picked up only after 4.5 months. Mm-hmm. I flew to Raleigh. I picked up my truck. I drove to Atlanta, picked up my trailer, dropped my trailer off in Nashville, went up and did my business in Cleveland, went back to Nashville, picked up my trailer, dropped it in Indianapolis, and drove cross country to Manhattan Beach. Took me about 3 weeks to handle everything. But during that time, everybody was scared to death of doing, you know, traveling. So I pretty much, you know, followed protocol, social distance, washed my hands, you know, did everything I was asked to do.
Right.
And when I got here, I tested negative. And at that point in time, I tried to not be an advocate for it, but I tried to let people know that you can, you know, you can get out if you're careful, in my opinion. I'm not telling anybody to do anything they don't want to do. But by example, though, I told them what I had done, and I just said, I made it. So you can make up your own judgment of whether I was stupid or whether I was smart.
Right.
But the bottom line was, I tried to instill a little bit of hope to some people.
Yeah. I mean, if you need – Mike's right in Georgia if you need him to pick up the Monsters car and drive it to you.
Is it the Dragula? I always wanted to drive that thing.
Funny, right now, the Dragula – my Dragula, I sold to a friend, and then he had to sell it because during the pandemic, his sister died, unfortunately, and he had to put the kids into school. I wound up selling it to a guy that hired me outside of Charlottesville, a town called Shelby. And now my trailer that used to carry my coach is now going to carry the Dragula around with him, because I have this escape room in the front of the trailer. So it actually, in a kind of a crazy way, it worked out to where the room is actually doing what it's supposed to do. And I'm going to be doing something totally different, and we'll talk about that, to help theaters open up in 2021 because of they were hit so hard over 2020. And we have a brand new Munster Go Home Blu-ray that I did the commentary in December of 19, right before this all happened, with Rob Zombie. So my plan was to go out on the road to do the theaters with my car and the Dracula and the escape room, and everything got locked down. So now we had to scramble around. But fortunately for me, I didn't have it nearly as tough as I could have. So I was very blessed.
Awesome.
So let's go right to the beginning of your career. So you're low boy right now. From what I read, you get you do some photo shoots with. Yep. You and your sister did headshots, and just magically you got discovered. Is it as simple as that?
It's pretty close to Lana Turner and Schwab's. What happened was, I'm a second grader just going about my business, and a aspiring politician wanted to impress my dad. And he wanted to impress my dad by putting Michelle, his pride and joy. He wasn't my biological dad. He had adopted me, but Michelle was his daughter. So this guy thought if he put Michelle in the movies, that Dave Lilly would endorse him for mayor. So I went along for the ride during this photo shoot. And at the end of the photo shoot, Amos Carr, who was the kid Hollywood actor, you know, photo guy, looked over and he goes, I would really like to take a couple pictures of the Butch for my own personal window and stuff. Do you mind? And my mom said, no, that'd be fine. So he had these hats that he liked to put kids in, and a cowboy hat. I had this goofy kind of a jockey looking, you put it on backwards, like, you know, when you're a jockey or you drive an English race car. So he put this hat on me, and I took this picture and put my hands up like this, and he put it in the window. And about a month later, this producer and director were walking by. They looked over and they saw the picture, and they happened to be casting a movie. They had two kids, one they hadn't cast yet. And they looked at me and they said, is he an actor? And he goes, no, he's not. He goes, but you know where we can get in touch with him? He goes, yes, I do. And they sought me out. I went up on an interview. I never had any experience, and they decided to take a chance on me and hired me and gave me my first role. And it turned out to be a 6-week movie with Eddie Albert and Jane Wyatt and Brenda Lee and Suki Sales and Nancy Culp. And it was a great first effort because it gave me experience, and the people that I was working with were very nice. And it allowed me to show the world that I had some acting talent, and I just continued doing it.
And what is that like? Like you're that young, you know, you're kind of in, for lack of better terms, you don't know anything, and you're thrown into you're thrown into the top of the top with no acting experience, and whatnot. Like were they very welcoming of you? Did they have expectations of you? What was your head spinning, or were you just kind of like? Or did you have that child innocence where this is cool, I could do it?
Yeah, it was kind of like I had a knack. Yeah, child innocence. I was pretty much kind of old for my years. I acted older than I was. I could read really well, even though I was in the second grade. I was good with, back in the old days, we had flashcards, so I was good with math. And so anyway, that wasn't an issue. I wasn't intimidated by the whole thing. And I remember when they called up after we did it, and I went home, the agent called and says, "Does Butch got the part? Does he want to do the movie?" Because at that point, you know, we really weren't sure if I even wanted to do it. We just kind of went up on a whim, and we had never been in the business, so we didn't know how the rules of engagement operated at all. So they called up and said, "Yeah, you got the part." And my mom says, "Yeah, you got the part. You want to do it?" And I go, "Do I have to go back to second grade over there?" And she goes, "No." I go, "Yeah, let's do it." So I like the idea of you know, getting out of school, even though it was work. It was kind of like a field trip to me that lasted 6 weeks. And then during that 6-week period, I picked up, I did a couple more commercials. I went on a few more interviews, and I picked up a Kellogg's Cornflakes commercial. I picked up an Untouchables episode. Huh. And one thing led to another. So before, I think on my first 10 interviews, I think I got 7 of the parts. So I was really lucky.
It's pretty good.
You kind of grades upon it when you talk about school. Like, what were the rules back then for child actors? Like nowadays, they can only go a certain amount of time or whatever. But were they bring you on set, say, okay, 18 hours, get to it, stay awake?
No, the same rules apply today as they did back then. And it's basically a 9-hour day, 1 hour for lunch, 1 hour for recreation, 3 hours for school. The only variance they have is if they need you later in the day, near the end of the day, they give you a 90-minute lunch instead of 60 minutes, and they can add a half an hour on at the back end. I mean, that's the only break they'll give you. Sometimes they can make arrangements to let you shoot in the evening, but they have to jump through a lot of hoops to do that.
So how did the Munsters come along? Like, as far as getting cast as one, this pivotal character that, I mean, hell, we're talking to you however many years later and still interested in wanting to hear your story. How did that come along as far as, like, you know, the idea of it? And also, like, how did they pitch it to you or even your family as far as the role?
This is another totally – my whole career has really been – a non-Hollywood type story. Everything that came my way came about in a very unusual way. Nothing was normal. This particular is a perfect example. As I, my mom, I had done a year of the Real McCoys right before I did the Munsters, which a year I did 8 episodes. So I was a reoccurring regular. And right after that, my mom divorced Dave Lilly, and she married a baseball player for the back then, the Los Angeles Angels. So her and Kenny, and this was great for me because I get to go to the ballpark. And even though my brothers, who were biological Kenny's kids, they were infants and toddlers. So I was 11 years old. So I was the one that benefited from going to the ballpark. I got all the perks. And what happened was, he got traded from the Angels to the Washington Senators. So the whole family took off to D.C. And I went to Illinois to live with my grandmother. My grandmother was a big antiquer, and since there was nobody in L.A., I thought, well, this will be fun. I'll go live in Geneseo with Grandma, go through the 5th grade. And while I was there, they cast the Munsters. And what happened was, is when they showed the network the pilot, they didn't want the mom, and they didn't like the kid. They liked Herman, Grandpa, and Marilyn, but they needed they wanted to bring Yvonne DiCarlo in to play Lily, not Phoebe, that Joan Marshall was playing. And the Eddie character, they weren't happy with the kid named Happy Derman. So they put a call out and said, you know, we're still looking. I guess they looked at really a lot of kids, and this is who they wound up with, and the networks ixnayed it. So my agent called them and said, I've got a kid for you, and I think you're going to like him. And we looked at every kid in Hollywood. And she goes, well, there's your problem. He's not in Hollywood right now. He's in Illinois. And they basically said, okay. She convinced them, and they flew me out. And I got off the plane. My uncle picked me up at the airport, and I went right to the CBS Studio Center. And they handed me 3 or 4 pages of dialogue, and I read them with Yvonne DiCarlo, and we got in front of the camera, and we filmed, and a screen test. They said, don't go home, make arrangements to report to work.
What?
So what I had to do at that time, my family's in D.C., and my uncle had an extra bedroom. I think what happened was I shared a room with my other cousin, Mike, but we hired a woman to take me to work every day because I had to get to work. So, Inez Collier, I remember she was a friend of my mom. They hired her to take me to work. And that's how I spent the next 2 years doing the Munsters.
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. I fly home to D.C. once a month to visit the family, but that was about it.
Wow. It's such a beloved show. I'm almost shocking as I like read up to get ready for the show, how it only went 2 seasons. It seemed like it was on forever, but kind of give us an idea of what it's like at stage, like recording and all. Cause what I always feel about the Munsters, what's so great about it is the family always plays it so great deadpan, while all these people or other actors who come in have to be paid to go over the top, scared, running away or whatever. It must be almost like gotta like bite your lip to kind of hold back the laughter of some of these overreactions of it. But tell us,
there was a lot of talent associated with the show, and it started with the producers Conley and Mosier, who had done Leave It to Beaver, and before they did Leave It to Beaver, they did Amos and Andy in the 50s, and they were like pretty cutting edge guys. But Leave It to Beaver was really probably the first show that featured a youthful lead characters. You know, Wally and the Beaver were the stars, and everybody else was a supporting act around them. And it was all about coming of age for kids, you know, way before the Wonder Years. So that was interesting. And what they did at Universal, the Universal Studios had found out, Conley and Mosier knew that they were doing the Addams Family. Bob Clampett, the animator in the late 40s and the early 50s, had come up with an idea for a cartoon feature of the Munsters with likable Frankenstein, universal character monsters as a cartoon that never went anywhere. But when they found out that the Addams Family was happening, they needed to put together a quick project, which happened to be the Munsters, and they got Fred because of his height. Al Lewis was his sidekick because they were both in Car 54. But the interesting thing about the Munsters was, number one, not to be too long-winded, but you got to remember this was a period that there was Mr. Ed and My Favorite Martian and I Dream of Jeannie, and there was a whole bunch of shows out there that had nothing to do with reality. It was all just good comic fun.
Right.
And that's why the Munsters did so well, because number one, you had very funny people, but you had storylines that obviously wouldn't be funny unless it was happening to Herman Munster and his caricature and the house and the dungeon. And you had the Universal monsters and the sound stages and the sets and all that Universal movie magic was applied to this TV series, and it worked.
So what is the what's it like for a boy that young now getting on this show that's having success and, you know, starting to go through the motions and getting attention? What is it like for you outside of you know, yeah, the show's doing really well. Now you're starting to get recognized by God knows how many people. How does a kid deal with fame like that?
Well, it's a case by case situation. You know, people have asked me, like, you know, what is it like to be Eddie Munster? And I go, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't remember a life not being Eddie Munster. So to me, it's norm.
Yeah.
But luckily, I lived about 20 miles away from the Hollywood studio. I had my own friends that had nothing to do with the industry. That was my job. This was my life. My mom, you know, when I wasn't working in front of the studio, I was washing cars to make extra money. I was keeping score at the bowling alley during league night. I would collect pop bottles. My mom would take care of, like, big expenditures if I needed a bicycle or something, that kind of thing, or a skateboard, or mini bike. But as far as my day-to-day pocket money and walking around money, I took care of that myself. And I was always pretty ambitious. You know, I was pretty, I mean, I always prided myself that if I hadn't been an actor, I would have been okay, because I would have probably been an architect or something. But the interesting thing about the business was, some kids had horrible times. It was a horrible experience for some kids, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But usually it's not the industry, because the industry is pretty much scripted. There's rules, there's guidelines. Most of the time, the problems become from the kid readjusting back into his own family and outside the business, where it's difficult sometimes with sibling rivalry. Someone's got to, you know, like, for instance, I had to hire someone to take me to work. So the family unit gets disrupted a lot, and sometimes it's not a good thing.
But
for me, I weathered it pretty well. I mean, it was the 60s and it was the 70s. So when I got older and I turned 16, I got my license. Oh, believe me, I did a bunch of stuff I shouldn't have done. But back then it was acceptable behavior. I mean, geez, I did a movie for Chuck Jones, and I spent 2 weeks in San Francisco in 1967 at the corner of Haight-Ashbury. You know, it was just, you can't explain what the world was like back then unless you were physically there.
Right.
Right. A lot of actors that come from these TV shows like Gilligan's Island, they try to go on to do other acting. They're typecasted immediately. You seem to have a very good steady career and all past the Munsters. Is there anything you thought you did in particular, or was just the luck of they didn't just immediately go, no, we just see you as a little boy werewolf?
Well, luckily, I wasn't wearing my werewolf outfit to interviews. So that was good.
I'd be everywhere with that thing.
So that was good. But, you know, one of the things that as a kid, it's not too bad. The awkward stage is to jump from 18 to 23.
Yeah.
To get through that. That you're not a teenager anymore, but you're also not a leading man. So you're this very awkward stage. But for me, I never wanted to be an actor. To me, it was a temporary job. I was making money to buy my race car, because I wanted to be a race car driver. That was like, you know, some kids want to be an astronaut, some kids want to be a fireman. Well, I wanted to be a race car driver. But unfortunately, I had the money to buy a race car, but I didn't have the money to campaign it properly. I probably could have sought out sponsorships, but one thing led to another. And the last year of the Vietnam War was going on, and I was in the last year of the lottery, and I had a very low number. So I had convinced myself I was probably going to go get killed in Vietnam. And I was 19 at the time. 18 is when the lottery happened. 19 is when I petitioned the courts to let me have my money that I was supposed to wait until I was 21, but they had changed the voting law to 18 during this window. So I was the first kid to go to court to get them to release my money early.
Wow.
So I had a boatload of money and I thought I was going to go die. So what better way to do it than go buy a bunch of fast cars and go to the beach and throw massive parties for everybody. And then when I went to the induction center to go to get my gun and my uniform, they found out that I had a bad knee from a skiing accident. And they said, no, you're classified 1H. You're not fit for duty. Man, wow. You could have told me that a year ago before I blew all my money. So luckily I had a few nice things that I had purchased and I just moved on with my life, but I was never an actor. So I didn't really get back into acting after Lidsville, the summer of 71, I turned 18. I did a Sid and Marty Krofft series and I kind of was disenchanted with the whole thing. It was never really a career move. So there was no love lost between me and the casting directors at that time. Cause I was like smoking weed on the way to interviews and, you know, doing stupid stuff that I'm proud of. So we both parted ways amicably.
So, you know, like I was, you know, as we were getting ready for this interview, I'm looking up, you still do so much stuff, you know, mm-hmm. with the almost keeping like the Monsters legacy alive in some way through your website and through the car and through all the, what do you think it is that keeps people, you know, keeps people interested and still wanting to know about it and still wanting to see these things and still wanting to this show? Like, why is this show still holding on to part of culture?
That's one of the interesting things. First of all, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better show to be part of as a kid, and I couldn't be happier to be part of the show as an adult because the legacy is so strong and so solid, and the family values and the other day the conversation when I my beard, you know, dissolves and Herman gives me words of wisdom in this tumultuous year we've had. There was like 20 million views and I was getting calls from all kinds of media people about that scene where he tells me about, you know, it's not what color you are, you're short or you're fat, it's the size of your, you know, heart and the strength of your character. So it resonates today, you know, 57 years later, as strong as ever. But what's interesting is it's when I go to tables, I have a book called Munster Memories, and I basically base the book on all the stories that people shared with me about how much the show meant to them growing up.
It's cool.
And it wrote itself because literally I would sit at a table and I would see people come up and they would look behind me and see a big picture of the banner that I put up. And they would just get this big smile on their face and say, oh my God, I love that show. They watched it with their grandparents who are no longer with them, or they remember coming home from school. But whatever their story was, it was always a positive, feel good, warm, big smile comes across their face. And sometimes they'll say, I don't know anybody here, but I know you, but I know that show. And it's like, how can you not be happy to just be part of people's lives in a good way, in a happy way, by doing your jobs 55 years ago, and how many millions of shows were produced that nobody ever remembers.
Yeah. Now, did you kind of like dip back into the Munster world like recently or within the last few years? Like as far, like, cause it feels like you're almost like the, just like looking at like, you're like almost like the figurehead of the Munster still, like you still kind of, able to keep that going.
Well, you know, what happened was for me, I pretty much distanced myself from it. But in 1982, MTV came on the air and a friend of mine was in Culver City. And I went out and I saw Fred and Al. They were doing the Munsters Revenge and they were 15 years older, 16 years older. And I reconnected with Al. Al was getting ready to open a restaurant in New York City. So I went with Al to open his restaurant to be there for the grand opening. We started reconnecting and doing some personal appearances together. And at the same time, MTV came on the air. And although I'm no musician, I always enjoyed music. So we thought, wouldn't it be great to do rock videos as a production company? And I teamed up with a guy named Phil Cohn and we did Whatever Happened to Eddie, which was a 2-minute rock video of the Munsters theme that I wrote the lyrics to. We were the first unsigned act to be on MTV. From which that idea, they formed a show called The Basement Tapes, which allowed a lot of bands that didn't have record deals but had a video camera and some music to submit their homemade videos. And I like to think we did some good for a lot of people to get them some exposure. But that lit the spark back into me being associated with the Munsters. And you got to remember, back then, Comic-Cons were just starting, conventions were just starting. The whole nostalgia rerunny thing was starting to take hold. And the Munsters was a good fit for everybody because the promoters like the fact that it's a very well-known show and it's very family-friendly and it's evergreen to them. And that's how I started doing it. And then it snowballed into now I make Munster coaches. I make Dragulas. I do a lot of road trips featuring automotive events, which is what I'm, you know, I wanted to be a race car driver and yeah. I'm a gearhead. So the Munsters, having the Munster coach in the Dragula with George Barris builds, I found a really strong, cool niche for me to go out and work with promoters to, I call my company Munsters Events. And what we do now is instead of just going to a table with a briefcase full of 8x10s, I actually crisscross the country with a 34-foot trailer and an escape room and do more bigger things, I guess, would be. I mean, usually I'm the first one in and the last one out, very much like a musician and a road.
Road, yep.
You got a 34-foot trailer, you got to be there first because if you're late, you can't get in. And you can't get back out until everybody else leaves.
Correct.
So I have a lot of respect for that song, The Load In, from Jackson Browne.
I worked video work for a long time, doing cameras and stuff. I totally get that. It's a person, yeah. You know, everyone's leaving. That was great. And then you're there for another 4 hours.
It's great. I love it. I love the road. I'm working on several things. I've always enjoyed the road ever since I was a little boy. Charles Carralt's On the Road was always my favorite show. So, yeah, I'm very, very blessed that I have a show that people resonate with. I mean, it's so popular. Licenses are still issued. Fall Out Boy did a song, you know, She Wants to Dance Like Uma Thurman with the Munster riff. Walmart at Halloween uses the Munsters theme to sell Halloween. I mean, it's still a very strong entity and very popular. Every guitar player in the world knows the riff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of the popularity, they've tried a few times to bring it back. They did the Munsters Today. They had a couple of TV movies. They did the Mockingbird Lane. They tried that pilot. Yep. Do you think they could get another TV show on, or would you even think it'd be better if they tried to do like a Hollywood movie of the Munsters?
I Hollywood's such a fickle place. You never know. But I do know this is most of the people that are now in the positions of power to greenlight anything didn't grow up with the Munsters. They don't really understand the Munsters. So that it's difficult, but I don't know if that's a record or not, but someone on Facebook the other day mentioned that they brought up 5 remakes, and you basically, yeah, you had the Munsters Go Home, and then you had Munsters Go Home, that was me, but you had Munsters Revenge, and then you had Here Come the Munsters, then you had Scary Little Christmas, and then you had the Munsters Today, and then you also had Mockingbird Lane. That's like 5 of them, so that might be some kind of a record.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty much run its course, but you never know. You know, Hollywood is just, they're notorious for trying anything that they think they can squeeze some audience out of it. And sort of I guess it's a testament to the original show that it was so strong that people feel that they can tap into the fan base.
So before we go, a couple months ago for our Christmas episode, actually, we had Scott Schwartz on from A Christmas Story who played. Who did he play? He played the young kid who got his tongue stuck to the pole. Such an iconic scene, you know. And you know, it very similar. Like in one way, that movie wasn't a big hit when it came out and blew up, and he was able to kind of get away. Like he didn't really have that child actor. Like he wasn't super famous, but he was talking about how he worked for a while in being like an advocate for child actors and kind of helping them through. Do you see like from your time? So many years ago to now, like a better situation in Hollywood for kids, or do you see it kind of like the same old thing? Like, do you see there's more outlets for kids to kind of handle this kind of stuff?
Well, I have a unique spin on that. Paul Peterson, who formed A Minor Consideration, and that's the group that Scott Schwartz took over. Paul retired. I think Scotty's a little, he may be not in as much as he used to be, but the organization was a very strong organization called A Minor Consideration. Paul and I have been friends forever. We both have, we're both sober now. We both, you know, used to party a lot together and he did his thing and I did my thing. I'm not really active in the day-to-day operations of that at all, although I am, you know, a member. And I have, whenever anybody asks for help, I try to be of service whenever possible, but that's more from my, more from my AA stuff. And what I do basically is I lead by example as opposed to, you know, talk the talk, walk the walk.
Yeah.
I partied for 40 years from 1969, until 2010. And, I've been sober over 10 years now and a little over 3 months. So, you know, I'm solidly in there. And what I do is, we used to do a thing of how to get into show business the right way. I used to be a spokesperson for people that had been, you know, fleeced by Barbizon or John Powers or people that took their money and then had no intentions of ever helping them. And what I would try to do to people is I would say, look, if you want to get into the business, there's nothing wrong with that. Follow your dream. But you've got to understand that it's really, the odds are not in your favor that this is going to work out. It's kind of like wanting to be your high school quarterback. There's a really good chance you're not going to make it to the pros. But if that's your dream, follow your dream, but have a backup plan. And what your backup plan is, and this is what I used to tell people, I go, look, if you just want to be in the industry and you're okay with not being in front of the camera and being a star, your chances are about 10,000 times better of figuring out a way to make a living is if you're a carpenter, you can build sets. If you know how to drive, you can be a driver. If you want to work lights and electronics, there's at the end of the movie, all those thousands of names you see that roll by for 20 minutes, every one of those people makes a good living and has great benefits and they're in the business. They just don't happen to be an actor.
Yeah.
So what I try to convince people to is if you want to be, you know, in the business, is a much better chance of you being around. And I go, those were the people that I hung around with. You know, those were the people that were my friends. I didn't hang around with other stars. I hung around behind the scenes with the guy at the coffee cart or the guy with the roach coats. Those are the people. But yet, I would try to convince people, don't give up your dream of being a star. But think about, you may want to have a backup plan of being in the business. And if you want to be a star, the best place to be around it, the closer you are to the camera, the better chance you're going to have of actually getting in front of it. So you never know where it may lead. But at least you're in the studio, you know, on the studio property.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, we're coming up close to our time. We really appreciate talking to you, Butch. Awesome. My wife's a super huge Disney fan, so I got to ask, is there any stories you can tell about working on the Magical World of Disney?
Well, I met Walt, but I didn't meet him at the Wonderful World of Disney. I met him, I was a kid, and when he used to open up the show, he would always have like Main Street, the parade would go by, and he picked me up, and what do you think, little Tommy? And, oh my God, Mr. Disney, it's the greatest thing. Disney was the gold standard for kids, and I was very lucky because one summer I actually did two-part World of Colors, which is pretty unusual to be out there for the whole summer. And I love Disney. My grandfather used to be an animator out there, and the studio was like Disneyland, extremely clean, the best commissary. I was there when Kurt Russell got his driver's license when he was 16, and I never got to meet Haley Mills. I was hoping to meet Haley. I had a huge crush on her, like we did. But Disney was a fun place to work. It was a good summer. I was 14 years old that summer, and I loved it. I've been very lucky. I've worked with Chuck Jones in the Phantom Tollbooth. I did the Monkees. My resume is only about 14 years long, but in those 14 years, I did nine My Three Sons. I was Ernie's best friend over and over. And you know, so even though I didn't hang around a long time, I had a pretty solid resume, and I enjoyed myself. And I got the chance to do records and, you know, this and that and teeny bop magazines. And it was fun.
That's awesome.
And this podcast.
Yeah. Now it's come full circle. You can say you've done it all. Butch, I want to thank you so much for your time, man. We really enjoyed chatting with you. We'd love to have you on again down the line and talk about whatever. If people want to check you out or see what you're doing or look up what Butch Patrick is up to, where's the best place for them to go?
You better get a pen because this is really hard to remember. Munsters.com.
Oh. Okay. it's kind
of. I've had that 30 years. And when you go to Munsters.com, it'll show you the store, the schedule, the other projects, the movie theater, Munster and Merlin, the spectacular evening of magic that will be touring the country with a movie and a magic show this year to help theaters reopen and
awesome.
Get them over the hump to bring the families out and social distance. And I've been thinking about this a long time, so we're going to take the show on the road and help some people come out of this thing and get the movies back open.
One more time. WWM. Butch, thank you so much. Stay safe out there, and we really appreciate talking to you.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
All right, Mike. Butch Patrick.
Would you like to live your life as a werewolf?
I I feel like living your life as a werewolf might be a little bit better than living it as a vampire.
I mean,
you're a little bit more active. You get some regular
day every 28 weeks or 28 days. Is it?
It's kind of like having a period, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're a good person or whatever. It's just, you know, come like harvest time, you gotta get locked in a cage.
Yeah, I mean, a vampire every night sleeping in the coffin and the sunlight bothers you. Like, that does not. That's like really bad quarantine. Like, we've been kind of living like vampires for the last year.
Yeah, you can't eat good Italian because if there's no garlic, you can't eat it. So,
right.
I mean, that's the biggest thing about vampires, yeah. Not eating good Italian.
You're correct. I would definitely live as a werewolf more than a vampire, if that's any. And then Frankenstein, that doesn't sound good either. But what an honor to have Butch Patrick on the show. Really, I mean, what a great 1-2 punch. Sam from Dogfish, yeah. And then Eddie Munster the next week. So,
as long as you don't ask me who they were, they're going to live for a long time.
Oh, interestingly enough, Mike, this next guy comes up. His name is Butch. No. Oh, interruption. What song does the horn of the General Lee sound like?
That's Dixie. Right?
Oh, yeah. There you go, Mike. See, now you're on. See, this is what I need. I'm waking up the synapses in your brain. They're ready to fire.
They're just flowing in the brain, man. It's like, just like the good old days, like the good old boys.
Oh, I see what you did there. God, he's back, guys. He's back. Which will, real quick, let's give you the four other names that are in the room with you and see how this goes. Mike, John Pasquale comes up to you. He's like, oh, hey, I'm John. He's like, I actually met you recently. I met you really recently, not too long ago. My name is John Pasquale.
Like, meet me, you say?
Oh, well, I mean, through the podcast.
Oh, through the podcast. Yeah. Okay.
Well, like, not long ago. This is not reaching back years. In fact, this is almost reaching back months, weeks, couple, like, a good amount of weeks. But
in that short time? Wow.
Mike, you know, we talked about not going to doctors. Mike tomorrow is going to be making an appointment with the neurologist.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's another one of those those buying time
I'm not buying time because I know there's nothing in there. It's just more in the line of I'm attempting to at least figure out how I can get close to this.
Well, Mike, I will tell you that he doesn't go by just that name. He has kind of a nickname that goes along with his name.
He has a nickname. Goes along. Nope. Not Butterbean. I don't know that.
All right, Mike, final guess. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, John. AKA Soho Johnny is dead. You killed a nice man. He was a really nice man.
He was a good guy.
He tried to really like raise money for charity and do good things. And now that comes to an end because your memory.
We'll start a charity for him. It all goes full circle.
Right, right. That's a good point. So you're just paying it forward. You're paying it forward. All right, Mike. You're down to four living people left. You killed poor Abraham really bad. I mean, you didn't even.
I mean, was he gonna? He's gonna take pictures of the room.
I mean, he's gonna document that you actually left people living. You know, you left some people alive.
I'm telling the tale. That's all that matters. I'm the author of this story, baby.
All right. Well, there's four left. This girl's dead.
Okay.
So a girl comes up to you. She's like, hey, I see you're killing everyone in the room, mostly men.
I did kill a lady, so I'm equal opportunity.
Don't judge me. That statement is definitely getting cut out and isolated.
You're too lazy. That's why I'm not worried I said it.
That is true. That would involve listening to the show. Like, if we had interns, that would be the thing. Like, all these sound bites would be the thing. I'd be like, please go get all these so I can make something with them. But anyway, Mario Loveland comes up to you.
Mario Loveland?
Just kill her, Mike. Just blast her away. Mario Loveland.
Wow, I don't even have, like, a vague...
Dude, this
I feel bad sometimes.
This is literally why I wrote these down, because I was like, we have done so many interviews. It's almost sad that you can't remember them all. There's only so much hard drive space.
Yeah.
She's dead. Okay. Mario.
Yeah, she's dead.
Mario is a...
Was she a part of a band, out of curiosity?
She was. She was the lead singer of Best X. Best X was the name of the band that we did. She was a very pleasant person, but now she's dead.
The name didn't even pop up, so I like first thought it's like, all right, I don't think we had an episode by her name, so that's
yeah. just by your Mario Loveland, she's dead. She's it's just like,
there is no amount of stalling word the answer's gonna pop up on that.
You could do 12 ums or Mario Love or give me a hint. You would have never got that one. So she's just dead. All right.
Yeah.
You got three more, Mike. You have a chance to go 500 if you get these two. Otherwise, a lot of dead bodies in the room. Greg Oliver comes up to you. Greg Oliver, early days of the guest. We really enjoyed the interview. I was very excited about this one back in the day, just because it was something that was.
He did the Lemmy autobiography, right?
He did, and he also made Turn Towards the Sun, which was that like. Following that guy, I think it was Mickey. I could get his name wrong. But remember, he sent us the film. We watched a really good documentary about this guy. All right. Mike, you got Greg on your team.
Yeah. That I think that's my best one. I think that's the only one I didn't even have to hesitate for the answer on that one.
Well, the panel was telling me, yes, that was your fastest response, they said.
Okay.
All right. Last one. Okay. This, I'll give you one hint. This is not the name you would know him by, but he was on our show. So Mike D'Amico comes up to you. Mike D'Amico says, "Hey, Mike, I see that I have one chance to get out of this room. We got a bunch of dead people over there. Your crew is interesting. Your crew is
like,
interesting."
Right off the bat, I'm like, I'm going to guess wrong because you're bragging on me. I got like five living people here right now.
Oh, so you're just going to kill them out of anger.
I got these god powers, so apparently I can chat back at him.
Well, Mike D'Amico comes up to you, says, "Please let me out. I'm the last guy here. Please, I don't want to be like them." Who is Mike D'Amico?
Don't really know. I'll take a wild guess and say Captain Bayonne.
Not bad. He did have a pretty cool name, but he goes by the name of Teddy
Goldsville. Damn it, Jim. it was those two names in my brain. I'm like, he's one of them because just from the, you wouldn't know him by his real name. So it's like, all right, those are the two go-tos. Okay.
And those of you guys listening, Teddy Goldsville was just some guy who was a U.S. men's national soccer team fan and women's, and would show up dressed as Teddy Roosevelt, and like ESPN picked him up during the World Cup, and it like became like this meme and everything else, and really nice guy. And we were excited. I remember laughing hard that we were getting him on the show. But now he's dead, Mike. You killed a nice gentleman. Yeah. I believe he was just a fan, just trying to get by, and kill him.
Well, if I was in the room and staring at a dude in a Teddy Roosevelt outfit, I think I would have got the answer. But you
correct.
You put a blindfold on me. I mean, again, you're not really clarifying the rules.
That would like, be another guy. That would be another amazing version of this. Just give you pictures of people. That might even be harder. because the names we type up, but like we did so many interviews not visually yet for years, that might be really difficult. I might have to do version two of that.
So
Mike,
we got a recurring game. Good for you,
Mike. You're leaving the room with Tim Woods, the Dungeons and Dragons guy, John Horsley, the Ainz Anthology, Wills Weller, the drummer of Tooth Grinder, Greg Oliver, the director of the Lemmy documentary and Turn Towards the Sun, and John Chatterton, the wreck diver. So you killed off a good group of people.
I feel good with my picks.
Of course you do.
I do. I'm fine with where I'm going. I think we're going to get out of the room. They're going to live long lives. I'll tell them, listen, if they put you back in another room, may not remember you in 2 years. I've got to be brutally honest. You live today, but Scott's going to bring back this game, and you might die in that scenario.
And also, like, the people you killed, you're not going to remember them by next week, so it doesn't matter. You know, it's right off your conscience really quickly, so you win either way.
I got to do what I got to do. You know, you got the God powers at the beginning of the year to bring back one dead person. That's true. The God powers to say, no, I'm going to take 8 out of 10 out of the equation.
Well, anyway, that's Mike's memory. All right, Mike, what do you got before we get out of here?
Well, first off, I'd like to say I'm pretty excited. I'm actually going to see my parents face-to-face for the first time in, what's it been? Just before the holidays, I guess. But they got their two shots.
There you go. So but it's not a big deal because they've been getting your cards all along.
Well, yeah, but then, like, my dad be like, listen, I'm very happy I got the card, but this is 2013, so I figure it'd be on, like, 2018 now.
Mike, I just got your happy 40th birthday card. It's been a little while.
You, you do realize you're 44, right, son? That's how late you are?
Oh, my God.
Out of curiosity, on a side note, happy birthday to you.
Thank you,
sir. What number are you?
I am the big 37, the big 37. Ooh. Yep.
Creeping up to the official middle age.
Yeah, yeah. Only 3 years until you throw me a game show. You know, win, Brendan, or lose, or something like that.
We'll think of a better name in 3 years, or we'll just forget and accidentally forget to send you a card in the process as
Absolutely. It was a birthday. I'm not a big birthday guy. My birthday has been the same for probably 10 years. I just go to a brewery every year. I just go check out a brewery, have a couple, you know, try everything, and then go home. Which was kind of nice, though, because this year, you know, there's pandemic, and we have a four-month-old, and I was able to have baby. My mom watched him for a little while, and I was able to go, and, like, we actually went somewhere. So it actually felt pretty amazing to go. I went down to Source Brewing in, where the hell is that, Tinton Falls, New Jersey? Great brewery, but so that's kind of what I do every year. You remember, you came to one of my tired hand's birthday.
I went to the wrong one.
Yes, that's such a good brewery.
I remember. I'm like, hey, I'm early, me and Izzy were eating food, and then you're like, well, where are you at? I'm like, well, this place is small, how can you not see me?
No, it's pretty big.
For those who don't know, Tired Hands, awesome brewery in Pennsylvania. I'm very thankful Scott introduced me to there. In fact, my last gift to him before I left was I made a special trip out there just to get him a crowler of beer for his birthday.
Yeah. We also went there, me and you, one day. We did me and you did a brewery excursion down there. We did Tired Hands and, like, a couple other Pennsylvanian ones. We did a lot of them.
We did like three or four because, like, we just be going along because we're kind of, it's kind of like, I guess, central Pennsylvania.
It's decent.
You gotta take it down the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and it was just like, we'd be like, I feel good. Like, yeah, I feel good too. And then we just give a look to each other. It's like, all right, get the untapped app.
Let's do another one.
All right. Exit right now.
I would just go to Google Maps and be like, breweries near me, and be like, oh, there's one 4 miles, and it's kind of north. So we just, like, made our way back up north.
But yeah, Tired Hands, I would highly recommend to anyone who likes beer. Probably one of the best breweries I've ever been to.
To continue the story, they have like kind of a mini brewery slash tiny restaurant, and then they have like a real huge brewery where they do most of their brewing. Mm-hmm. So that first trip, me and Scott went, I went back to that one where I'm like, man, everybody's late. I figure Camacho would be here by now at the very least.
Yep.
Nope, there was a second one.
Yeah, it was like it's like two blocks away or something like that. It's a little bit of a walk, but yeah. If you guys are into craft beer, we're not in the promotion part, but you need to go to Tired Hands. To me, it's like my top three probably breweries that I've been to. So,
speaking of beers, by the way, so we have our my company has their monthly like all hands meeting / happy hour that we did today, just kind of like the company updates on Zoom and talk about stuff. It's where everybody's free to kind of have a couple beers while listening to the Zoom. I kind of forgot that Thursday is also one of my workout days. So I had this very interesting feeling of working out kind of buzzed today.
I've done that before. Once or twice, like it's funny because a lot of times I'll like say it's like a Thursday. Thursday is always a hard workout day because it's so close to Friday, and like let's say you came home and you're like sitting around, you're delaying the gym time, and you're like, I could really just have a beer and sit here and just enjoy myself. And I always like equated like once I had a beer. Not going to the gym. Like that was always like my like, well, if I had one, then well, I might as well have three more and just enjoy the rest of the night. But there's been a few times I've had like a beer and been like, no, I can still go. And yeah, it's actually not that bad having a tiny like, you know, you kind of feel a little bit like maybe the strain's not as bad, or maybe you're kind of just like a little bit more happy working out. Like I remember like it not being that bad, like running or something, that would be a whole different thing. But like lifting, I mean, I feel like you might get some beer muscles too and be able to like kind of power through things, but I haven't done it much. I would say maybe three times in my life I've worked out with like having a beer or two in me, but it is an interesting feeling because I always associate, I cracked a beer, the day's done. Like, I'm not doing anything else productive today.
Yeah, it's a hard little balance because, like, I guess when I got into the workout, like the warm-ups, that's where you're just kind of starting to feel the buzz is there where you're kind of like, I'm not sure how great this is going to be.
And what kind of workout is this? Is like a just like a body weight kind of like push-ups, jump around, all sorts of stuff like that?
Let me think of like there was a lot of bit of squats, a lot of bit of the basically like shoulder touching, so you're in like push-up mode.
Yeah, so like a lot of body weight, cardio, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think the cardio part hit me a little bit more. Like the
how many did you have where you were rolling into the workout?
I only had two.
It's enough.
I had a good one that I really liked. If anybody goes out, Black Watch, it's called, from Highland Brewing. They're out of Asheville, North Carolina. I highly recommend that. But I also just to check in a beer because I always try to up my new brew Thursday, so I'll just grab whatever. So I bought beer for the parents. They're not really the brew hounds, so I had my mom's Red's apple strawberry. That was very weak. I mean that's something when you sit back and regret it's in this, like when you're feeling the buzz, it's like if it was just the one really good beer, you sit back and say, well, that was worth it. When it's coming from a Red, you're like, son of a, you're doing squat jumps with the, like, I have two 25-pound weights in my hand. So
I hope this ends with like you having no pants on again.
No, we did not have a return of the situation where I had to exercise in my boxers.
And you were doing frog jumps.
Frog jumps, yeah.
Those lawsuits that followed everyone else who was on this Zoom call.
No, nobody said anything, so I assume it's all right. But then again, there are times like I'm doing certain moves, and like Callie comes up and she'll just start humping me, and like nobody's saying anything, but I'm like, you guys have to have seen this. Like anytime I'm like doing like push-ups or whatever, she just loves just like jump up and.
My dog only does humps when like if people come over, like say we had like two couples over. When the first couple comes over, he goes nuts, loves them, goes crazy, he's annoying for like 10 minutes. But if like there's like a staggered entrance, like you guys come over and then like another friend's couple comes over, that's like the end of him. Then all of a sudden he's just like humping people and like it'll just be like he'll look all calm, and then before you know it, I look over, and he's just, like, humping someone. Like, he just loves, like, the amount of people. The more people that come, the more he can't control his humping.
So, if, like, a couple comes over, he's fine. When a bunch of people come over, all he can think is orgy.
Pretty much. He can't contain it. Like, I remember, like, Christmas Eve, like, we get together with my parents and my brother and my sister and their family, like, I just remember bringing him down, like between the presents being opened and the boxes being thrown and the wrapping paper and the little kids running around. He can't handle like the little. He just start humping all the little kids. It's like, and then I'm like, stop! You know, it's so embarrassing. You feel like it's your kid doing it. You're like, stop that.
And on top of it, Obi got some girth to him.
Oh, he can throw his weight around.
Like, if he tackles a kid, that kid is not going to be able to get up from the humping. Like, you have to literally save the child from the dog.
He's a predator. But yeah, what are you going to do? You can't change. He's 10. He's going to be 10 this year. You can't change it. You can't change him now.
I just imagine a thing where, like, he's following a trail of dog treats and he walks in and it's that dude from Catch a Predator on NBC. It's like, Obi, sit down. We need to talk about
things. Have a treat. instead of brownies and have a treat. Sit.
Yeah. We have a video here from the last Christmas Eve party. How old is that child? Oh, he's 8 years old. Yes. Hey, but, well, in my days, that's a 56-year-old. So exactly. Fine.
In dog years, dog years, it's legal.
Yeah, I mean, no locking up the Obi.
Yeah,
you know, it's cute, it's adorable.
So, did you make it through your workout? Fine.
I was able to do it pretty good. I would say by the time I got to the midway point, I probably sweated out the brewskis. That's where I kind of meld back out. But it's just like a really. I'm glad we didn't have to do any kind of like weight throws or anything like that. No, where you got to concentrate on holding on to the weight.
Yeah.
I've come close before.
I listen to Bert Kreischer's podcast a lot, and he drinks a bottle of wine while running like 6 miles. Like he's trying to do 2,000 miles this year, and he'll just like apparently like pours himself glasses of wine and just runs on the treadmill. I couldn't do that.
I can't fathom that's a pleasant feeling.
No, not at all.
Has he thought about not doing that?
Well, he's Bert Kreischer, so I have no idea. He likes to drink.
I mean, he's a national treasure, and then one day we're going to be like, oh, just like Tiger Woods.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed your drunk workout. And so it's okay. I mean, you had two. If you had like six, then the workout would be a whole lot different.
Well, that'd be drunk workout. I talk about buzz workout today.
I think buzz workout's okay. I think like slut. Okay.
Did you just say slut workout?
No, slight buzz workout. Okay. Like a tiny buzz where you could feel it just a little bit. I think that's acceptable. People do the beer mile and people run races and have a beer and it's okay.
Well, that's a mile. Yeah. You're sweating out immediately. This is the drinks set in, and then I had to go and work out.
Well, the beer mile is pretty tough. That's four beers in 1 mile. That's chugging a beer every lap.
I still feel I can do that easily.
I think COVID I'd be all right.
Done, I'm gonna have to challenge that.
All right. Well, so once again, if you check our Instagram next week, Mike will do the beer mile. The bow and arrow with dynamite. There's a lot of content coming out on Verbal Shenanigans, but
yeah, and I'll be keeping up just in case Scott just calls me out of nowhere and asks me a Dukes of Hazzard question.
Oh, before we go, last one.
All right.
All right.
See you have to Google this.
What was the CB name for Uncle Jesse?
Lost Shepherd.
Wow. Shepherd. God. All right, yep. Fine. Rapid fire. What car was the original General Lee?
Charger.
What year? I'll give you two. 64 or 69?
I think it was a 64.
Wrong answer, Berlew. 69. And that's where it ends. I'm just going to keep this page up when we podcast and just hit, like, we'll be in the random of like an emotional discussion. I'll be like, so what was Daisy Duke's restaurant's name?
Well, it was the Boar's Nest, but Scott, this is my father's funeral. I'm not sure why you're doing this now. I mean, we're not even recording.
I should just be game. I'm maybe able to hit you with the Dukes of Hazzard question at any scenario. You're at work doing a presentation. You're in the bed with the wife. Like I'm just going to hit you with random questions.
I think the happiest day of your life is when I'm in hospice and I have dementia and you just rapid fire Dukes of Hazzard questions and I'm just like shouting out banana and you're like, ah, wrong again, Berlew.
Well, judging by all the people you killed tonight, the dementia might be setting in. It might be setting in. So, guys, it's time to go. It's time to get out of here. The Grandmaster and Brennan are saying goodbye to you. Mike, anything to promote before you roll?
I will promote a former guest of the show, Bill Lester. His book, Winning in Reverse, Defying Odds and Achieving Dreams, is out on any platforms that have digital books or physical books. He was a real fun guest. Yep. He was one of the original drivers in NASCAR, African-American descent. He drove in the truck series. He made two starts in the Sprint Cup series. And another reason why I'm bringing it up, when this comes out on Monday, the following week when NASCAR heads to Atlanta, Bill Lester will be back behind the wheel of the Craftsman Truck Series.
No.
Good for him.
Wow. Good for him. Yep. That's awesome.
He made the big announcement earlier this week. He was looking for sponsorship. I believe it was Camping World stepped up for him. So
Wait. Is this another opportunity for Verbal Shenanigans to step in and be a sponsor of a car?
I mean, we could check on it. I mean, this is big return. I mean, that would be great if he had to drive a car with our pictures on the hood.
Yeah, that logo that Mike Morse did, like drawn right on the hood, that'd be fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe it'll cost us about $50,000, but I'm sure we can figure out.
You have it. No, I mean, you got it. It's pocket money
We got like 9 days. To get the money, so
the Berlew has no, he's got deep pockets. $50,000 to get us on there, he's covering it, no big deal.
I mean, I do put a lot of money into dynamite, so yeah.
Well, I will promote. Go ahead.
But I'll just say is that again, the book name is Winning in Reverse, Defying the Odds and Achieving Dreams.
Yeah, he was a great guest. I will promote a fellow comics, Ken Kranz and Chip Chantry. Both really, really funny guys. They have a new podcast called I Love Rock and Roll, where they are going to basically just break down different albums and rock and roll bands. And they're going to come and talk about music. Very funny guys. So I guarantee the podcast will be funny. I believe the first episode is up. So please go check out I Love Rock and Roll. That's it, guys. We are on all sorts of different platforms, so whatever you want to listen to, wherever you want to listen to us, we are there. Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and a couple independent radio stations. We got a lot of great feedback from the last episode with Sam. I want to thank Butch Patrick, a.k.a. Eddie Munster, for coming on the show. And this show just keeps on rolling. We got a ton of great guests lined up, really interesting people. from all walks of life. It's not always household names, but I think it's people you'll find interesting stories from. So,
well, obviously they're not all household names, as we found out from the game earlier today.
But other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Josh Eppard, I hope I remember you come next year.